This is the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio.
We had an apartment in the city, and me and Loretta liked living there. It'd been years since the kids had grown a life of their own and left us alone. John and Linda live in Omaha, and Joe is somewhere on the road. We lost Davy in the Korean War, and I still don't know what for. Don't matter anymore. You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Old people just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in there, hello. Me and Loretta, we don't talk much more. She sits and stares through the back door screen, and all the news just repeats itself like some forgotten dream that we've both seen. Someday I'll go and call up Rudy. We worked together at the factory, but what can I say if you ask what's new? Nothing what's with you, nothing much to do. You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Old people just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in there. If you're walking down the street sometime and spot some hollow ancient eyes, well, please don't just pass them by and stare as if you didn't care. Say hello in there, hello.
That was John Prine. And that's from an album that was just brought into the station by our friend Jim Rooney. Jim Rooney, the producer. Jim Rooney, the musician. Jim Rooney, introduce yourself.
How do you do? How do you do, Jim?
Why did you bring this particular CD?
I've done a lot of work with John Prine over the years, I guess starting about 1982 and up until last year. And This album that I brought in today, I had nothing to do with because it was done in 1970. John was starting out. He was still a mailman in Chicago, but he was getting noticed. He was playing at a little club. I don't think it was the Earl of Old Town yet, but it might have been called the Fifth Fret or something like that. At any rate, he was playing at a club there, and the reviewer from the Chicago Sun came in, Roger Ebert, who became well-known as a film critic. Well, he was just covering all kinds of beats at the time. And he reviewed John, and the review was headlined, "The Singing Mailman Delivers." Well, these tapes sat in John's garage for quite a long time, a really long time. And he credits his wife, Fiona, with getting him to clean out boxes in the garage. And that's how he found them. And they listened to them, and I listened to them. And it's just quite remarkable. This was done. He did an interview. After Ebert's review, Studs Terkel took notice of John. And, of course, Studs was very, very famous in Chicago and did a great interviewer, one of the great interviewers of radio all time. And John went in there to do an interview with him, and he asked if he could stick around afterwards and record a few of his songs on their really good microphones. Because at the time, what he was doing was sitting on his bed in his home with a little dictaphone and recording his songs that way and mailing them to himself in a sealed envelope, registered mail, which was how you could prove that you wrote a song at a certain day. It was way of covering your publishing. And I heard some of those tapes too, sitting on his bed. Any rate, he did this one at WFMT in Chicago, which was one of the early public stations. And what kills me about Hello in there and really knocks me out is that right away, John Prine was John Prine. You hear it all. His delivery, his guitar playing, everything is right there from the beginning. It's not like he kind of grows into this stuff over decades. And to me, it's really unusual.
Well, Jim, you talked about, we heard a Hello in there from this collection. You talked about his wife, Fiona, wanting him to get rid of boxes and boxes of
things. Well, she wanted him to move them and see what was in them.
You must have a ton of archives yourself as a former producer or still a producer and as a collector.
Well, I'm not as much of a pack rat as John Prine. I think you'd have to go pretty far to do that. But I do have I mean, anybody accumulates a lot of things over the years. I never had a studio of my own. I never wanted one even. And so very often what would happen to the tapes after you work with somebody is that those tapes go to the artist, and I wouldn't be keeping them around the house. I do have a few multi-track tapes here and there, but mostly they move on. But I do have a lot of paperwork, and my way of working on an album is to make lists, and I have yellow legal pads, and they've never crashed on me. I've never lost, you know, I keep all this information, and I am putting this into an archive, which is starting at UMass Amherst, the New England Folk Archive. And UMass has a pretty extensive archiving program of social movements in New England. That's what their focus is. It's the W.E.D. Du Bois Library. They have all of his papers. Mm-hmm. And so the folk revival of the 60s especially fits into that. And so they're starting to accumulate material, and I'm, I guess, one of the first to put my stuff in there, a few boxes of things. And I've written 3 books, so there's the material that went into those books and all the records I've produced. I don't know how many I've done, but probably 150 or more. Mm-hmm. And all those legal pads and various recordings and interviews I've done and stuff like that.
What about your own recordings?
Well, they're in there too, mm-hmm. yeah. And as much material as I could accumulate that would work. And I'm also helping my former partner, Bill Keith, the banjo player, his wife, he died 2 or 3 years ago now, and his wife, Claire, is going through Bill's stuff, and his stuff will be going into this archive as well. And so we're starting, and also the man who managed the Club 47 before me, Byron Lord Linardos was his name, and he developed these calendars that have become quite the collector's items that were our monthly calendars for the club who was playing there, and we mailed them out to all the members, and they were really beautiful to look at, and Byron designed them and developed the design. I carried it on. I took his place in 1965, and so between us, there are 7 years of those calendars. But Byron's widow, Catherine, is going to be putting in a lot of his memorabilia to the archive. And also a fellow named Dave Wilson, who had a small publication called Broadside, and which chronicled every week of that time, where who was playing where, and articles about whoever was around town in Boston, in Cambridge in the 60s. So that's quite an extensive amount of stuff that's starting it off.
You're listening to The Folk Show here at New Hampshire Public Radio. Let's listen to another John Prine tune. Which one are we going to hear now?
Well, as I said, I've worked with John starting back in 82 or 3, and our most recent collaboration was a year and a half ago, I guess. And it's a collection of duets with various women. And we did another album like that called In Spite of Ourselves about almost 20 years ago now. And he wanted to put that one out on vinyl, and we thought we needed to record a few more songs. Well, one thing led to another, and we've done a whole other album. This is the theme you might see. This is couples songs. Mm-hmm. And the first one was In Spite of Ourselves. This is called For Better or Worse. And one of my favorite cuts on this is an old George Jones song called Color of the Blues. Blue must be the color of the blues. And we got Susan Tedeschi of the Tedeschi Trucks Band. She's a wonderful, wonderful singer and guitar player, wonderful guitar player. And it's one of my favorite cuts on this album because I love the song to begin with. And she picked it. I didn't pick it. She picked it. She knew it. And she plays beautifully on it and sings with John on it, and I just love it.
Let's listen to it. We're visiting with Jim Rooney here on The Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio.
Up above me are the skies, like the twinkle in your eyes. Sitting in the tree seems to sympathize with me, for he's not singing like he used to do. The pretty waters and the sea feel as cold as you left me. Yes, blue must be the color of the blues. Mm-hmm.
more blue than gold and red. Blue must be the color angels choose. A blue dress you proudly wore when you left to return no more. Yes, blue must be the color of the blues. Blue days come and blue days go. How I feel nobody knows. Life is mighty empty without you. There's a blue note in each song that I sing since you are gone. Yes, blue must be the color of the blues. Yes, blue must be the color of the blues.
That was Susan Tedeschi and John Prine from the album For Better or Worse here on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. That was a selection chosen by Jim Rooney, a longtime producer and friend of the Folk Show. We're going to visit some more with Jim after a short break here at NHPR.
Hello?
NHPR Summer Car Raffle is back.
Oh my gosh, are you for real?
You could drive away with $2,000 in gas cards to use at any gas station, or you could win the grand prize, $25,000 toward a new car.
No, I never won anything before. That's terrific. I'm going to hyperventilate now.
But you can't win if you don't play. Get your raffle tickets now, just $50 each, or six for $150 at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and Great Waters Music Festival and New Hampshire Music Festival presenting Chanticleer, the Orchestra of Voices, July 23rd and 24th in Plymouth and Alton. GreatWaters.org. We just played some music from John Prine and the album For Better or Worse, a selection from Jim Rooney. Jim, you know, it's kind of funny that I had Bill Staines in here last week. And he was saying that you and, let's see, you and Bill Keith, and I think it was Tom Rush, inspired him to become and continue writing songs and performing.
Well, we had a Sunday night. By 1965, I started managing the club on a daily basis and took over from Byron Leonardos. And on Sunday night, we always had a hootenanny. This was pretty standard fare for every folk club at the time. Now it's just called open mic usually, but same deal. And so anybody who wanted to could come in and get up there and do their three or four songs. And we always had a list of people, and they'd get in line and do their thing. And Bill Staines was one of those people. Jay Giles was another one of those people. Chris Smither was one of those people. And it was a good place for them to get going. And the Club 47 was a wonderful little room. It is now the Passim, Club Passim, the same room. It's been going as a music venue for since 1963. Wow. That's when we moved into that room. It was before that. It was over on Mount Auburn Street. But at any rate, this would be where Bill and Jay and Chris and many others started out. And we had different music every night when we started. Eventually, we spread things out, but at one time, Bill Keith and I and Joe Val, we would play one night a week. And the Charles River Valley Boys would play one night a week. Jim Queskin and what became the Jug Band would play one night a week. Tom Rush would play one night a week. And so it really worked out. So you could build an audience that way for each group or each person. And a lot of people, the young people, started coming. It only cost $1 to come in. You didn't have to drink anything. It was just a coffee house. But if you didn't have any money, nobody was going to hound you to, you know, drink something or buy something. So a lot of young people came to that club. And It was, and I guess Bill was one of them, and listening to us and to Tom, and that's the way it worked.
Now, did Tom Paxton ever go to Club 47?
Well, he didn't play there. He was working in Greenwich Village, and he would have been too big a star for us. We couldn't have afforded him at that time, because Tom took off pretty fast with Ramblin' Boy and you know, those songs, Bottle of Wine. And so he was doing concert halls almost from the start. And so we were working a little lower on the totem pole.
He just played over at the Palace Theater this year. There was a little folk festival at the Palace Theater, and we gave him an 80-year cake. He got a birthday cake.
Yeah. Well, it's the new 60, they tell me. I just turned 82, and Tom is a little ahead of me, and he came to my 80th birthday party,
wow.
And I went to his. And Tom is another guy. I have known him since the 60s. When Bill Keith and I would play in New York, we shared the bill with Tom a couple of times back then. And then over the years, I've just known him for a long time, but I'd never done any work with him until we, on Nancy Griffith's album, Other Voices, Other Rooms, we recorded Can't Help But Wonder Where I'm Bound. And we did a show down in Austin, Texas, and she invited all the songwriters whose songs were on that album to come, and he came. And we were just chatting backstage, and he said, "Boy, you know, I really like the way your records sound." And I had heard a couple of albums he had done, and they didn't kill me. And I said, "Well, Tom, anytime you want to do something, call me up. Let's get to it." So we started. That was be a 95 or 96 in there, and that's when we started working together on records. So now we've done 4 or 5 together, and he's a wonderful, wonderful artist to work with. He's very focused and very fun to be with. Very relaxed. He doesn't worry everything to death. He lets the musicians play. The musicians love to play with him. They love to listen to his voice, and they love to listen to his songs. It's such a refreshing. He's always writing. To me, this is, and Prine is too. That's a real challenge, and so is Rush. To write for 40 or 50 years,
mm-hmm.
Good material, that's doing something.
Right.
These songs don't grow on trees. So I guess we'll listen to the most recent album we did, Tom and I, was called Redemption Road. And that song, to me, is one of his very best. And we did it with Janice Ian, which was a great thrill for me because she's a wonderful artist.
Let's listen to Redemption Road from the album Redemption Road as we're visiting with Jim Rooney here on The Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio.
Paid the man all he was owed, tipped my hat and walked away down that sweet redemption road. Put it down to yesterday. Come redemption, my old friend. Seeds of life are sown. Come and lead me to the end of that sweet redemption road. Looking back, I can't complain. I took out what I put in. days of snow and days of rain and redemption in the end. Come redemption, my old friend, when the seeds of life are sown.
Redemption Road from Tom Paxton from the album with the same name here on The Folk Show. Jim Rooney selected that tune for us tonight, and I'm just wondering, Jim, what, as a producer, how do you know when a song is a good song? You said that this was a really good one on this album. What makes it good for you?
I don't know. I know one when I hear one. I've been doing this for a long time. And I know myself as a singer, there's a songs that I want to sing. You won't have to want to listen to it more than once and get into it. And it's... As I say, when you listen to these people like Tom Paxton or John Prine or people that have been doing this for 40 or 50 years, that's really something. To come up with a song like Redemption Road after all the songs Tom Paxton has written over the years, and that shows something to me that is so good. It's a depth of... This is not a one-hit wonder, and he certainly had his share of big hits. Everybody knows some of those songs of Tom's, Lesson Too Late for the Learning. Everybody knows that. Prine songs are the same way. Rush has songs like that, and yet they continue to come up and work hard. You have to really dig in there to get these songs out, especially, you know, after 30, 40, 50 years. You know.
He spends a lot of time on the road, Tom Paxton does.
They all do.
Mm-hmm.
They like it. They love to, and they get a wonderful response from people, and it's very heartwarming. And you can, you know, John Prine's had a lot of health problems over the last 20 years. He had cancer back almost 20 years ago. And this performing for him is, it just gets him going. I don't think he could be happy. I don't think he'd last long sitting at home. I just really don't. And Tom Rush has a schedule that, you know, he's getting up on 80. And Paxton tried to retire, and he didn't go for it. It didn't last very long. And
he's touring, doing some shows with the Don Juans.
John Vesner and Don Henry, the Don Juans. Mm-hmm. And that just they just have a good time. I play because I like it. I enjoy it. I don't play a lot, but when I do, I really enjoy it. And it I'm sure it keeps me young. It's fun to play with other people. It's fun to get an audience that enjoys your music and gives you some feedback. It's good, not a bad way to go.
I understand you're going to be gathering some people together sometime soon to do a little show over at UMass. Is that correct?
Well, this is a way of launching this archive, the New England Folk Archive at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, which is a good place for it to be, I think. It's right in the middle of New England. And actually, Bill Keith and I went to Amherst College. That's where we met.
Of course, then.
And in our senior year, a promoter named Manny Greenhill, who was just beginning to work with Joan Baez and was working with Odetta at the time, he came up to UMass and wanted to put on a concert there. But he needed a campus organization. And at the time, Taj Mahal and Buffy St. Marie were going to UMass. And Rick, who's a banjo player? At any rate, Bill Keith and I were going to Amherst. And we started the Pioneer Valley Folk Song Society to put this concert on in 1960. And that group is still going.
Wow.
Do you believe that? And so I think it is a good place for this archive to be. And I'm hoping that they'll get Taj Mahal and Buffy St. Marie involved as well. So at any rate, on the 21st of September, we're having a ceremony to open the archive up. And my material is going in there. My partner Bill Keith's material is going in there. Dave Wilson, who did Broadside, and Byron Linardos, who was the first manager of the Club 47. So that's the way we're going to start. And we're hoping that many, many artists from that time and this time, too, like there's a lot of action still up in the Pioneer Valley. Signature Sounds in Northampton. Chris Smither lives in Amherst. It's still a very nice place for music.
You're listening to The Folk Show here at New Hampshire Public Radio, and Jim Rooney is our guest. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk a little bit more and hear some more music right here on The Folk Show.
Time is running out to be an early bird in NHPR's summer car raffle. Hi, I'm Rick Ganley, host of Morning Edition, reminding you to get your raffle tickets right now. Don't miss out on three chances to win $2,000 in gas gift cards, not to mention $25,000 toward a new car of your choice. Purchasing raffle tickets is on your to-do list, so don't put it off another day. Buy one for $50, three for $100, or six for $150 at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and the Barnstormers Theater, Tamworth, presenting Hugh Wheeler's adaptation, We've Always Lived in the Castle, now through July 21st. Tickets at barnstormerstheater.com. This is The Folk Show, and I'm Kate McNally. We're here visiting with Jim Rooney. It's always a treat to have Jim come by and talk to us about some of his favorite treasures from his music library. We've talked a little bit tonight about John Prine. We also played some music from Tom Paxton. And another person that was hanging around the Club 47 scene that we should probably talk about and play some music by is Tom Rush. What about Tom Rush?
Well, I'd say so. He wasn't just hanging around. He was very early on, from 1962, he became the most popular artist who played at the Club 47. Maybe it had something to do with young girls that liked him, but a lot of young guys liked him too. He just had it right away, and it's like Prine that way. And so I've known Tom ever since that. He had a radio show on WHRB, the Harvard radio station, called Balladeers, and we all played on that show. And he was very much into country blues. Eric von Schmidt was a great teacher and mentor to Tom, and he is very well grounded in that kind of music. And then later on, he started writing his own songs. And we didn't start working together as me being a producer of his records until pretty late in the game, although I tried several times to talk him into coming down to Nashville, and he never seemed to think that was going to work for him. But when we finally did do it, we made an album a few years ago called What I Know, and he just couldn't believe how easy it was and how much fun we had. As my teacher in Nashville, Jack Clemens, said, we're in the fun business, and if we're not having fun, we're not doing our job right. And I really agree with that. And so I always like to have fun when we're making records, and it shows, I think. The musicians are happy. Everybody's happy. And so Tom, we started working then, and then I got involved in mixing his 50th anniversary album, and then he kept saying, I'm writing songs and I'm working towards a new album, and it finally came true, and it has come out recently, and I want to play something from that. And the first song I want to listen to is Carina, Carina. And when he put it on the list, I said, gee whiz, an awful lot of people have done Carina, Carina. I always trust the artist, and I'll tell you what, I think this is one of the best, most beautiful, understated versions of this song that I've ever heard. And that's saying something, because it has been done by a lot of people, and I love his version.
Let's listen to Tom Rush from his Voices album and his version of Carina, Carina here at NHPR.
Carina, Carina, where you been so long? Carina, Carina, girl, where you been so long? I ain't had no loving, girl, since you've been gone. I got a bird to whistle, got a bird to sing. I got a bird to whistle, I got a bird to sing. I ain't got Carina, I ain't got a thing. Since you've been gone.
That's Tom Rush from his latest album called Voices here on The Folk Show and his version of the tune Karina, Karina. Our guest in the studio is Mr. Jim Rooney. It's such a treat to have you stop by. I really appreciate you coming all the way.
Oh, it's not from, that. It's all downhill.
You're in the valley, right?
I'm living up in Vermont, so it's fine. I'm happy to be here.
That's great because you have so much insight and history and experience that it really gives us a different perspective of a lot of the music that we're playing on a regular basis here on The Folk Show. So I do appreciate that.
Well, I know that Tom grew up in New Hampshire and has always been part of the New England, he's a New England guy. He lived out west for a while and spent time out west, but I think his real roots are right around here. And he wears very well.
He does.
You never get tired of hearing him or being around him. When you go see him in a concert, he's giving you everything you think you came for. He's funny, and he's and he also can really move you with his voice is great on that song there. His guitar playing is really just he set out to learn from the. We were very lucky to have a lot of the blues masters, the older blues masters, still around, and they would have come to the Club 47. And that's how Tom learned, and so many other people did as well, Peter Wolf and the Giles, J. Giles himself. And so he took it in and really made it part of him. That's part of Tom Rush, the way he plays the guitar. And a foundation that you can really build on. And as a songwriter, that's kind of what you need. You need something that you can really count on musically to support you when you're trying to come up with some new songs. And all of the songs, except for Karina, Karina and one other song, the 10 songs on this album, Voices, are all new songs. Tom just wrote them in the last 2 or 3 years.
Now, tell me, Jim, what's your secret in terms of being such a great producer? And I mean that because, you know, you've had some really great artists that you've worked with, like not just Tom Rush, but Nancy Griffith, Iris DeMent
Peter Rowan.
John Gorka.
You know, I sing and play myself and have written some songs myself. And I know what it feels like to be on the other side of the glass and be in a room where you're trying to do some recording. And it can be a little nerve-wracking. And as I mentioned earlier with Jack Clement, we're in the fun business. And it's not like we're all joking all the time, but we're just relaxed. And you try – and I've been working with some of these musicians in Nashville now for 30, almost 40 years, some of them, and we know each other really well. I know what a guy can play and what he can't play, what he's good at and what he isn't good at. And so I call the people up that I think are going to work for a certain artist, and they are – you know, this is what they do for a living in Nashville. And they are there. They're ready to go. They're very committed, and they are great listeners. Mm-hmm. I think, to me, that is sort of an overlooked part of music. You need to really listen. And if you're listening, you're not talking. And these musicians listen, and if they feel there's something they can contribute, they contribute. But if there isn't a place for them or something, they won't play. And a lot, they don't have to show off all the licks they know. They're just beyond that. And so they're very supportive of a song and a singer. That's kind of what Nashville used to be all about, was you focus on the song and the singer and support it. You're not there to make a piano record or something like that. As a matter of fact, in the liner notes to this Rush album, he quotes the engineer I work with a lot, David Ferguson, who can be a bit brusque. And the keyboard player that Tom brought with him wanted to redo something. And Fergie says, Well, we're not making a piano record. We're making a Tom Rush record. You know? And I don't know. We that's it. I just tend to not boss people around. I like to let the musicians find where the song lives. And there is a place for a song, and the artist will tell them. Someone like Rush or Tom Paxton or Prine, they know what the tempo is of that song, that they want to do it. They know that. So you can count on them, and all I do is get the musicians in a circle around the artist and say it's Tom. Tom will just sing the song with his guitar all by himself with no microphones or earphones or anything else, just the guy standing around him, and some of them take notes and some of them just listen. And that's how we always start. Mm-hmm. And I think that is key. And it's not rocket science as far as I'm concerned. And I think the results are good, and the artists are happy, and that's why we continue to work together.
So I can't believe you just turned 80, Jim.
I can't either.
I know. It's just amazing. And are you going to keep celebrating for the rest of the year?
Well, I don't know. I almost killed myself celebrating for about 4 months. But I feel great, and I don't feel 80. I used to think 80 was probably it. The only problem is, of course, you know, you save your money and you try to figure out how much money. Well, now I'm supposed to live till I'm 95. Well, that other 15 years, how am I going to pay for that?
Well, I know there are probably a lot of people out there hoping that you'll be their producer, so your phone
we'll
may
see.
Start ringing. And
we'll
you can...
see. I'm an analog guy in a digital world, so.
So should we finish up with another Tom Rush tune?
Yeah, why not? Let's do the title of this album. It's called Voices, and it's a really beautiful, reflective song, and I think we could use a little reflection in these times we're living in at the moment, a bit of perspective on life and the big picture.
Well, we'll finish up with this tune, and thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure, Kate. I love the fact that you've had this show for I don't know how many years, but a long time, and people are still listening,
and
which is great.
I'm very grateful. Thanks again.
Voices in the river, voices in the sand, voices in the city and out upon the land. There are voices in the mountains and way out on the sea. Voices that are you, there are voices that are me. And if you listen, you can hear them. You can hear them if you're still. They have always sung for you, and they always will. There are voices at the ocean's edge, voices in the foam, singing songs of high adventure, singing songs of going home. There are voices in the stillness, voices in the storm, voices in the dying sun and the day that's being born. And if you listen, you can hear them. You can hear them if you're still. They have always sung for you, and they always will. Voices of the Mahala are from way beyond the stars, from oh so very long ago and oh so very far. And they sing a song of wonder that's too much for the mind, but your heart can understand if you are still and you are quiet. And if you listen, you can hear them. You can hear them if you're still. They have always sung for you, and they always will.
voices everywhere. Some will say you're crazy, and I say you shouldn't care. But know the songs that sing the truest are in the key of love, to the rhythm of a loving heart, to the wing beat of the dove. And if you listen, you can hear them. You can hear them if you stay. They have always sung for you, and they always will.
Thanks to Jim Rooney for stopping by New Hampshire Public Radio. We look forward to seeing him again, maybe when he's 81 years old. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and Brattleboro Retreats Children's Inpatient Psychiatric Program, serving young people ages 4 to 12. Learn more at brattlebororetreat.org. We're winding down here at the Folk Show.